This week on Out of the Air features artist Jerry Lynn, who takes black figures from the past and present, immortalizing them on canvas. Next, we feature photographer Rick DeCorey with an eye for old and forgotten, or whatever captures his eye. Our spotlight is on Canterbury Summer Theater's next production of the musical review The Pinup Girls with director Lori Labor.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, and WDSO 88.3 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Canterbury Summer Theater. The next production that you'll be hearing about is Pinup Girls. It's a musical by James Heineman and Jeffrey Loden. Lori Leber is working on that. She's going to be directing it. Welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Lori, tell us a little bit. You've been involved with the Summer Theater for 10 years. Tell us a bit how you got involved with it and a little bit of that history before we talk about your show.
Yeah, so my first show at Canterbury was Barefoot in the Park. I was a part of the Bossier Parish Community College production up from Louisiana. Ray Scott Crawford is the artistic director at Canterbury and has been for decades now. And he is also the director at Bipsy Theater. So I was part of his production. We brought it up to Canterbury at the end of their summer season, which we still do. That was my first experience in Michigan City, and I fell in love with it within that week, and I haven't stopped coming back since.
It's changed a lot in that decade.
It has, yeah, it has.
So since you've been involved with it, tell us about your early involvement with the theater, not only roles like acting roles, but also, you know, things that you worked on over those 10 years.
So I was in Barefoot in the Park. I was in acting in Parallel Lives. I've done stage management for Greater Tuna. I was the company manager and costumer in 2016 and 2017. So that was me being there for the whole season and getting to work with all of our resident companies that come in from all across the nation to work with us in the summer. And then the past four summers that I've been up there, I've been directing. So this is my fourth show to direct at Canterbury. Last summer, I did No Way to Treat a Lady, which was like a murder mystery. And then I did I Love You, Perfect Now Change, which is a very popular musical all about the happiness and misfortune of falling in love. And then I did Vanities, the musical back in, 2017? No, 18. I don't know. I love coming back every year because the community, most of all, Michigan City is such a special place and people are just so kind. I'm from the South, but there's nothing like Michigan City hospitality.
Yeah, they call it Midwest nice. So what do you do outside of a summer theater? What's your livelihood that way?
Well, my day job is a high school English teacher. Okay. And then I midnight as a theater artist. But so I'm in education, and it's enjoyable. I work with children. I had 180 students this past year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's a lot, but it helps me grow my skills to be able to do theater, which is my true passion.
Well, especially directing, if you can herd that many kids over the time, you can certainly herd the people on stage. You know, no matter what, directing is many times, especially musicals, like herding cats to begin with. So,
absolutely.
So, tell us about Pinup Girls. That you're directing that. A little bit about the synopsis. What's it about? You know, songs that we might know from it, or maybe not.
Oh, yeah. So Pinup Girls is a musical review. It is set in a VFW hall, which is conveniently located at the Canterbury Summer Theater this summer, 807 Franklin. And it is four people, three girls, one boy, who have come to put on a performance for anyone that shows up. And they are reading love letters and letters to home from soldiers all across the decades, from World War I all the way up to Iraq. So it's heartfelt, it's funny, it's sexy at times. It's everything that goes into being a soldier and being a family member of a soldier. A lot of the music is from all those different decades. So we have everything from Please Mr. Postman to Single Ladies by Beyonce. We have some Dean Martin, Nancy and Frank Sinatra, Shaft, the theme from Shaft. Oh. That's the sexy part. So it's got music for everyone, no matter what age you are, and you can connect to the stories no matter what age you are. So,
and it's so high energy. The show is very bouncy.
Yeah, it is. And it's purely there for audience enjoyment. That's how the show was crafted, was to entertain an audience and to let the audience be a part of the show. So it's very intimate, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I can't wait to get started working on it.
How many characters do you have in it?
We have four characters, three women, one boy. We have Dana, who's played by Sarah Donofrio, Joel, who's played by Reed Graham, Leanne, played by Jenna Weisbach. I hope I didn't say that wrong. And then Megan, who is played by Victoria Hickman.
And there's a fifth character that's referred.
One, Sharon.
Oh, yes, and we have Sharon, who is referenced in the show, but unfortunately she's having a baby that day, so she can't make it. So Joel, played by Reed Graham, jumps in to be her character.
It sounds like a lot of fun. It's a musical review where you're using popular songs to tie it all together. Everything from very modern things to like things from the American Songbook and everything traditional.
Are these actual letters, or are they crafted for this performance?
I'm not sure. I with my experience with playwriting, I think there's probably a lot of truth in it, but I don't know how much of it is accurate. Or, you know, real letters, but they certainly read like real letters. They're very.
Of course.
So real quick, tell us about the show dates and everything and availability of tickets.
So the show opens July 5th, and it runs July 5th through 8th, and then 12th through 15th. Wednesdays at 2:00, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:00. And you can get your tickets online or at the box office. Again, we're at 807 Franklin Street. Our phone number is 219-874-4269.
Thank you so much, Laurie Labor. Thank you for being on Art on the Air Spotlight, Canterbury Summer Theater, Pinup Girls.
Thank you. See you soon.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi there. This is Public Radio theme composer B.J. Lederman, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome Jerry Lynn to Art on the Air. Jerry was born in the suburbs of Memphis and has an identical twin brother, Terry Lynn. Together, they collaborated on artworks. they were known as Twin. Jerry has recently embarked on a solo career, and his first solo show, called Genesis, is featured at the Gallery Guichard in Chicago. His work is recognized by its unique blend of colors, shapes, and textures. Thank you, Jerry, for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome. It is really wonderful to see you.
Aloha.
Aloha.
Well, Jerry, how we like to start off is kind of get your background, your origin story, which we talked about just there, but, you know, expand that out, having a twin that does art also. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
Well, Larry, thanks for it. That's a really good question. Thanks for asking that. I am from Memphis, Tennessee. Well, I say I'm from Memphis, Tennessee, but actually I'm kind of the suburbs of Memphis. Memphis is kind of divided out into different little suburbs and communities. I'm from Arlington, Tennessee, which is right outside of Memphis. It's similar, I guess, in flavor of people and personalities and things of that nature. But to sum it up, Arlington is country. It's the country. And Memphis is the city, basically. So I grew up in the country. I grew up going to a little country church called Rice Chapel AME Church. Speaking of church, my family, my parents were, we grew up very religious. We kind of had a strict upbringing, and not strict in a negative way. We just had boundaries and rules, so to speak, that we abided by. So that played a big role in my upbringing and thusly now in my artwork. As I'm going to kind of be telling the story as we go on. But we grew up in the country, close-knit family, grandparents. Both grandparents were living, growing up. As a matter of fact, my great-grandmother and my great-grandfathers were all living. So I got to experience a lot of rich culture and I guess you can say heritage kind of coming flowing through them.
Just multi-generational kind of, love.
Multi-generational love. You're right. I experienced it all. I spent a lot of time with my grandparents who lived down the street from us. And me and my brother, I got to say, I got a identical twin brother. I have an identical twin. We spent a lot of time just around family. I remember going fishing with my grandparents, with my grandfather, we just kind of hanging out, just enjoying the country life. I had fun growing up. And I realized how rich and experience I had as I've gotten older. I really appreciate that upbringing.
So Jerry, as a twin and having all those grandparents around, did you and your brother do things together, or did you go off with different grandparents and have different experiences?
We did both. We did things together. When you're asking that, you're talking about like as a family or?
Yeah, you know, like I mean, were there certain grandparents that you spent more time with and your brother spent, you know, I know, of course, as twins, you're going to spend a lot of time together, just messing about, but.
You know what? Mike, if you ask my grandmother or my mother, they would say that I could have spent more time with my grandmother, and my brother spent a lot of time with my mother for some reason, or vice versa. I didn't really notice anything, but you would ask anybody, they'd be like, yeah, you spend a lot of time with your grandma. You always stay down at your grandma's house. But I think it was something like that. I remember being around my grandmother a lot and my grandfather, and at times, like I said, my brother wasn't there. We would just kind of be hanging out, just kind of us, me and my grandmother, grandparents, and then we would be together. You know, we had a lot of family reunions, get-togethers. I mean, just growing up kind of, I guess, in the Black community, that's just a thing that we did. You know, it was a lot of, on Sundays, everybody would gather at my grandparents' house, And I miss those days. Now thinking back on it, I really...
It features so much in your paintings, though, that singular church with all the gathering and all the people. And just you get a very true sense of the tightness of the community.
That church that comes up in a lot of my paintings is reminiscent of the church that I went to, the Rice Chapel. So a lot of people kind of think, oh, you just paint a little church. You know, it's like a cute little church. You just want to. No, that's literally the church that I went to growing up. It was called Rice Chapel AME Church. It's a little white church with a little steeple on top. Maybe 10 people in the congregation on Sunday. I was telling somebody this past weekend at the show at Gishara Gallery, we sung in the choir. And we were singing in the choir. This is how small the church was. We would have to get out of the choir and go down to the congregation so the pastor would have somebody to preach to. Because
you might say literally preaching to the choir in that way.
So. You're right. Good one. Good one.
So let's talk a little bit how you got into art. Was there any early influences, like with your grandparents, your parents, or you know, how did that develop in your early stages, or how did art come into your life?
Art is something that I've always had a liking for or inclination. I just always was drawn to being creative. I do not know where it came from. I just think it's a gift, honestly, from God. But my parents, my mother in particular, she was in the school system. And she always would give us like art supplies, me and my brother. And I do vividly remember that. She was always kind of giving us pencils and crayons and things of that nature. I don't know if she got it from school or what, but I think it was something just to kind of keep us busy. But I just remember those early days of just creating. And I just thought it was natural or normal, so to speak, until I kind of got older and realized that all little boys and kids they drew, but they weren't kind of as involved in drawing and creating that me and my brother were doing at the time. So I really appreciate what she did. She was very supportive of us drawing and creating. I remember her even signing us up for a little art class one summer after maybe could have been like in the sixth grade. I mean, those things of that nature, she was always supportive of us just being creative. And that's something that I owe a lot of gratitude, and I thank her for that. But those were kind of early moments. And going into like high school, junior high to high school, I remember airbrushing. Airbrushing was a real big thing.
Oh, like yeah.
In the 90s, you would go to a mall, there was always an airbrush shop, you can get your t-shirts. I was always fascinated to airbrush. And I went to a summer program. It was called Governor School for the Arts. It's kind of exclusive type of deal where all the, I guess, best artists from around Tennessee would go and gather like juniors and seniors. And we would kind of meet up. It was called Governor School for the Arts. So I met this guy. He was from another school in Memphis, and he was airbrushing. I was like, man, how do you do that? So he kind of put the bug in my ear. And from there, I started really diving into the whole airbrush experience. And I came back the next year in high school. I started selling t-shirts. Not only was I involved in the arts, but I was always kind of business motivated too. I always kind of had this entrepreneurial type of drive as well. I don't know which one is stronger, but I think they kind of go hand in hand. I think Warhol said business is art anyway. So,
right.
Yeah. So I always kind of married the two. I knew from an early age that art is a business. And I kind of consciously formed kind of the decisions and things that I did from that point forward with those thoughts in mind, being commerce or business and art. I love both of them. And I just kind of wanted to kind of marry the two together some kind of way.
So what happened after the airbrushing? What did you gravitate toward?
Well, after airbrushing, me and my brother, we're identical. We trying to figure out what we want to do for school. We both got scholarships, full ride scholarship. We were pretty smart too. So thanks to my parents for pushing us to, in the academic area also, but we got full ride scholarships to the University of Memphis. Actually, I got a full ride scholarship also to another school in Nashville, which was called Tennessee State. It's a HBCU, historical Black university as well. But he didn't get it. So just, I guess, kind of being twins and us kind of just kind of sticking together, we decided, I guess, as a unit, we would go to the University of Memphis since we both, you know, got full rides there. But we didn't go for art. Just kind of the typical parent.
It's so nice that you can do art, but
right. Right. Why don't you major in architecture or something?
Yes.
So that's what we did. We majored in architecture, technology. They didn't have a full like a architecture engineering major. They had this kind of hybrid type of deal called technology, which always kind of bugged me. I was like, technology. I mean, I'm going to go for 4 years just to get a technology degree. I can go to a junior college for this. But anyway, it was close to being, you know, art. So we thought that was the way to go. Hey, you're still drawing. Lo and behold, the first semester, we both, I think I had the lowest GPA. I had a 0.8 my very first semester in college, you know, on a full ride scholarship, you know, almost 4.0 GPA going into college. Now I have a 0.8. So that was kind of like chapter one of my wake up call of, you know, what do you want to do in life? And a lot of people ask me, like, what were you doing, partying and stuff? Like, I mean, I don't get it. But to me, it was, and my brother had the same experience. He had a low GPA. We both got on probation. Eventually, we, you know, got our scholarships back, and we kind of rode it out for a while. But and down the road, I lost it again. But that's a whole nother story. But
well, you were not interested in what you were doing. Is that what you're saying?
That's,
yeah,
that's the point. I'm kind of a long way from.
No,
saying,
no, I like the long way.
But that's pretty much it. I mean, it's and I got two kids now, and I always tell them, you know, do what you love. I know that's kind of like, I won't say the best advice, because you know, you got to be practical, well, things, but
you're gonna have to do it for a long time. You better have a passion for it.
you have to. I mean, even as you think about people like Steve Jobs and all these people who what's Tesla's Elon Musk.
Yeah,
these people are passionate. I mean, they're not just, you know, doing it for a paycheck, you know. So I think I really truly believe artists is a perfect career to have an example of somebody doing something for passion versus income, so to speak, and especially if you can be successful at it, because it's kind of a motto for life. It means you can do something that you love, and you can make money from it. Literally, you will make money from it if you just kind of pursue it. If it's truly something that you're good at, I think everything's kind of going to work out in the long run. I always say you got to kind of look at your life from kind of the deathbed, and, you know, not to make it gloom and dreary, but if you were leaving the earth, like most people are, from what I see, they're like, their biggest regrets are like what I should have did in terms of here in your heart, not like little trivial things as far as a job. And, you know, I don't know. I just really feel you got to have a passion. You got to love what you're doing. And now I'm off subject. So,
well, you know, in 2023, anything is possible. You know, anything you can dream up, you can create a possibility for yourself.
You're truly right. And speaking of years, COVID, I think, gave everybody kind of a life lesson, and, you know, you got to follow their heart, because, I mean, we're not here forever. So I think right now we're kind of on a genesis of just people kind of doing, you know, unique kind of ideas. You see a lot of people starting businesses. And I just think that's a great thing for the world. But let's get back to college.
So, but what about, I just want to ask about COVID. So, and the timeline of when you decided to break off and do your solo career, was that a COVID kind of separation or?
Yes, it was COVID. It was a combination of growing up as men, me and my brother. I forgot, I haven't told you, but going past college, we started a successful art career as collaborative artists. We would work together on a canvas, painting side by side under the name Twin. That was our moniker, basically. And we were very, very successful. I mean, we were successful. It was a great time. And we kind of did that for about 10 years. We had a good kind of 10 years. I guess you can say that's kind of chapter two of my life. We had a lot of success with that. A lot of celebrities bought our paintings, from Isaiah Thomas to the founder of BET, Bob Johnson. I can't even name the people who own our paintings, and a lot of corporate collections, but all under the name Twin. But along the way, my brother and I, I guess I'd say specifically my brother, he always kind of had throughout this kind of inkling that he wanted to do his own thing. And I never really believed him. You know, I'm like, okay, you know, whatever, you know, just keep doing Twin. But he would, every once in a while, he'd just, I kind of want to do my own thing. I'd be like, well, you know, whatever, you know, not even just kind of thinking, you know, not thinking anything about it. But it kind of got to a point, and it really, to be frank and honest, we kind of got into like a toxic relationship. And it could have had a lot to do with us just kind of, I guess, just being twins, growing up really from babies all the way up to grown men, you know, like this, stuck together. <basically. laughs> And, you know, us both trying to find our own paths and ways. But to be honest, it really was kind of toxic, you know, which was very unfortunate, to the point where, like, to this day, I really don't even communicate with him, you know, which is, you know, it is what it is. But they kind of go into a whole nother thing.
Sometimes there's a fallow period before things grow again. So
you're right. So I'm saying all this, you know, hopefully somebody out there, I know people have issues with families and things of that nature. But, you know, I think everything happens. Somebody said that everything happens. They don't happen to us, they happen for us. So I truly believe that. So I'm saying this with a smile on my face, not even, you know, thinking anything of it, because I know truly that everything has a reason and a purpose behind it, which kind of goes into the show that I'm in.
I know, right? Genesis. What a perfect Genesis. Name.
right. Genesis. It's just I would say it's a coming out party for my art and me as a professional artist, because this is the first solo show that I've done just as me, you know, with a large body of work in one space. So I'm very appreciative to Andre and Francis at Guichard Gallery for inviting me to do the show. It kind of all came together just at the right time. You know, we just kind of made it work. And
you sold three paintings before the show even opened. So
whoa. Yeah, so I think it was four. And we
four?
Sold
whoa.
Yeah, then we sold the opening, we sold some more. So it was great. I can't it's always good to show your work and share what you do, but it's even better when you're selling artwork, because that's as an artist, that's kind of the name of the game for me and for my family. This is what I do full time. So I'm really grateful for it. Just shows that people resonate with the work, and it just gives me some more money to buy some more canvas to paint.
There you go. My question is from Twin, when you went off your separate ways, what style, was there a stylistic change? Did you finally kind of find your own way, or how did that work?
Good. thank you for it. Good. Because I kind of go into tangents sometimes. Yeah, I started doing this positive artwork, as you can see kind of behind me. This is not Twin. This is Jerry Lynn behind me. This is work that very inspirational, very uplifting. The work that Twin did was kind of historical in nature. We kind of primarily did a lot of landscapes and things of that nature, dealing with our upbringing. But my solo departure, so to speak, me having a child, a daughter specifically, my son was born a few years later. It just kind of put me in a whole another mind space as a man, basically. And I started really thinking about what they would see. What would I want them to see in the future as far as and what I want them to feel? So I started painting images that made them, what I thought would make them proud, would uplift them. And in the process, I realized those same paintings uplifted everybody. Everybody resonated with positivity. Everybody resonated with.
They just are luminescent with joy and beautiful colors, and they just make you happy to look at them.
Thank you so much. That's how I feel when I paint it, and that's what I want people to get from the artwork when they see it. So yeah, you guys hit it
and
right.
And it's so interesting because like the drips that are on the paintings makes me think that I'm going to the next thing. Like it's mm-hmm. like it leads me to the next thing. And I wondered mm-hmm. what were you thinking when you what were you thinking when you put them in? Because for me, it's like there's more of the story. Let's keep going.
I guess you could say so. I mean, it's about layers. Life is about layers, and the drips is just I painted layers. One drip, it'll be one drip layer of drips. Let that dry, another layer, and it kind of flows down. But it's just about life. It's just like my life is constantly changing, and I'm embracing that change. So I just kind of put that into the artwork. I just want people to realize that. You know, you got to embrace what life throws your way.
Jerry, we just have a few moments left and we give you a chance to share any upcoming exhibits or current exhibit and also like how people can find you online.
Well, I have a show coming up. I got a couple shows coming up. I know one in particular is at my gallery in New Orleans. It's going to be August the 5th. It's going to be an opening. They have a Lenny night. I'm represented by Stella Jones Gallery in New Orleans. So they're going to be having an exhibit. Actually, the show is next month, July. But the opening is going to be on August the 5th, which is called Lenny night. So I'm working on some amazing work for that show. Of course, the show at Gallery Guichard is up right now. It's an amazing show. If you get a chance, stop by Guichard Gallery. My website is artbyjerrylynn.com. And that's also my Instagram, Facebook, all those social media is Art by Jerry Lynn. If you just Google my name, Jerry Lynn, you'll see all kind of things pop up, all kind of goodies. So,
well, we appreciate you coming on Art of the Air and sharing your wonderful life story and experience. That's Jerry Lynn. And you can find him at artbyjerrylynn.com. And you can also find him online. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air.
Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you, Esther. Thank you, guys. It's been wonderful talking to you.
This is Pledge Week for your public radio station. And Art on the Air encourages our loyal listeners to support this station by making a monthly sustaining pledge so we may continue to bring you this great program. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM, and WDSO, 88.3 FM.
We would like to welcome Rick DeCorey to Art on the Air. Rick is a photographer with an eye for the old and forgotten. Barns, buildings, vehicles, and other objects out to pasture. Thank you, Rick, for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome.
Hi. Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, Rick, we always like to start. I'd like to get to know a little bit about our guests, your background, whether it's in art and photography or everything. So like where you grew up and just tell us your kind of story and how you eventually got to that. Like I always say, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Rick.
Okay. Well, I was born in Chicago, but I lived all over the country because my dad was a Korean Navy guy. So I lived East Coast, West Coast, but now I'm back here in the Midwest. I am a Navy veteran, and when I was in the Navy, that's when I started my photography with a Minolta film camera, experimented with different films, different lenses. I enjoyed shooting lots of different things. After that, my photography kind of fell off for a little bit. I became a firefighter, did that for over 20 years. I got back into photography with a little point-and-shoot camera, taking photos of different things I like, and eventually started, I don't know how to say it, messing around with different viewpoints and experimenting like that. And after a while, my wife says, "Boy, you're getting pretty good. You have to try selling this." And so that's what I started doing about 10 years ago. So I'm seriously into photography for about 10 years now, but I've been doing it for 40-odd years.
So do you do art festivals or?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I just did one recently. I've got two more coming up next in July. One in Indiana, Griffith. Got one in Fairmont, Illinois.
Where's the one in July?
In July, Griffith Park in Indiana on the 15th and 16th.
That's the Art in the Park thing they do every year.
Yeah, it's going to be my first time doing it, so I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, it's a nice little festival. Well, also earlier in your life, did you have any interest in photography growing up in school or anything like that, or was that something you picked up just later in life?
Yeah, the yearbook. Were you on the yearbook?
No, nothing like that. I was a pretty bad student in high school, ditching classes and everything. I had no interest in anything like that back then. It wasn't until later in life, like I said, when I was in the Navy, when I first really picked up a camera and started shooting. So I was in my 20s. So it's been about 40 years.
But do you still have those images?
Yeah, in a closet.
Okay. That's good.
I'd like to digitize them. Mm-hmm. And, see if I can edit them a little, make them a little better.
So did you go from the Navy to firefighting? Did you segue from the next?
Odd jobs between that and the firefighting. I kind of fell into firefighting by accident, actually. I had just lost a job.
Okay.
And my wife and her pastor took me out to lunch. And he asked me, "Have you ever thought about being a firefighter?" "Well, not really." I said, "Well, come on down to the fire station sometime. Fill out an application." I did. Fell in love with it. And eventually got hired on a career department.
Excellent. I want to go back to your career in the Navy. What did you? First of all, thank you for your service. But tell us sort of what you've done in the Navy. What was your area of expertise?
That's a funny one because I was a barber in the Navy. And okay. Now I don't even like getting my hair cut. But I worked in the warehouse. My rating, we ran the ship's store. We ran the ship's laundry, vending machines, and the barber shop. So we're pretty essential services.
Oh, yeah. Now, what kind of did you serve on the ocean, on water?
My first 2 years was on Midway Island, where the Battle of Midway occurred,
right,
which is really nice. And that's when I got my Minolta and taking photos of anything I can find, the Goonie Birds, old pillboxes, the buildings there, really old and interesting buildings. And then my last 2 years was on a ship that basically stayed tied up to the pier the whole time. It was a tender, which they don't go out to sea very often.
Right. Yeah, that had to
it
be
something. Sounds like that closet holds a couple books worth of Navy photos. They seem it would make a very lovely book.
Oh, it would. And my wife keeps bugging me, "You got to go through your old photos." One of these days.
The being on Midway Island, you're in the middle of the Pacific. People, I don't know if they visually know that, but that's quite a ways away, even from Hawaii, and quite a ways. So you're out in the middle of nowhere, really.
Really, it is. And there was a saying we're like 2 hours from tomorrow or yesterday. I can't remember which way the dateline worked.
Right. Yeah, because the dateline is a little bit west of there. So yeah, you're just about there. So tell us about a little bit about your photography itself. I mean, I have your website up here, and we'll talk about how to get there and everything. But what drives you to take what you take, and maybe your method? Like, do you go out with a plan to shoot certain things, or is this one of those things like I'm going to go find some images today?
Actually, it's a combination of both. Sometimes I do have a plan. I see something on the internet, like, cool, that looks like an interesting spot to photograph. I'll make a plan, go do it. Other times, it's just like driving along. Ooh, look at that. Stop, hop out, set up my camera, shoot away. Again, I shoot a lot of old stuff. It's my way of preserving things. Because some of the things I shoot are disappearing. Some of the old barns, some of the old tractors and cars sitting by the roadside, they're disappearing. So I think of myself as a preservationist of sorts.
Sure.
Archiving all these images.
Right.
Well, I see like you have farm-related architecture, automotive-related, even close-up of vehicles, which are almost like still life, and urban exploration are some of the topics or themes that you work with. So tell us your process. You go out and shoot an image, and you know you're shooting digital now, obviously.
Right.
So then what's your post-production process? What do you do with that image?
Well, once I get them imported into Lightroom, usually I'll go through a culling process. Okay, that's good, that's good. Trash. Good. Then once I get all the culling done, then I'll start on my editing process. Do the global editing first. Then, depending on the photo, might convert it to black and white, might not. Enhance colors a little bit, maybe some cropping. Most of the time when I'm done editing, that's it. But other times, like, I'm going to sit on this for a while and come back to it in another day or two and fresh eyes look at it and why did I do that? Let me change this. But that doesn't happen very often. Usually when I edit, that's it. I'm done. If I go, wow, when I look at my image, it's done. And that doesn't happen very often. So every once in a while I get a wow and like, whoa, that's a keeper for sure. Others like, hey, it's good enough to post on social media, but I'm not going to print it. So I'm kind of picky like that.
Yeah, it's good to be discerning. So when you're mm-hmm. taking your image, let's say of like a specific area on a vehicle, do you start out doing that, or do you do the whole image and then crop to that particular thing that you want to highlight? So are you taking the image of the whole vehicle and then cropping it down to?
When I first started, how I used to do it, and now I'll shoot certain parts of the vehicle because I don't like to crop too much that I didn't notice. I'll crop that out. But usually now I focus on details. I consider myself a detail photographer as far as at least on vehicles and on buildings. I'll go for the detail parts that people don't usually see. Mm-hmm. And I focus on that. Like I did a car show recently that did a lot of taillights, grills, hood ornaments, things that people normally overlook. They'll look at the whole car. Oh, that's beautiful. They don't look at the taillight and the shape of the taillight, the colors and all that. And so that's what I do. I highlight that.
So how do you render your photography? Do you print and frame it? You do it on metal, do more traditional print paper? I know I do a lot of canvas gallery wraps, but tell us about what your end product was, especially when you're taking out to the like art fairs and for exhibiting.
I do a lot of Matic prints unframed. That way people can buy their own frame off a couple different sizes. Some things, depends on the subject, some things I will put on metal, especially the more black and white, the industrial type stuff. Because it just gives it a look that's unbelievable. It's out of this world. And have you ever seen some of the metal prints I have? It's like you can fall into them.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, on WVLP, 103.1 FM, and WDSO, 88.3 FM. You know, back to your process, when you're doing post-processing, do you save, like, well, like you talk about the cropping and everything, and I'm going to give you my thing when I use, and I use Photoshop, is I take the original image and I keep all the different layers of the processing before, and then I save that. Because later, cropping it, you know, you can do that anytime. So it's like, so I don't know if what your process is on that. Do you save the whole image that you worked on? Because all that, and like I said, I'll sometimes process something for color and HDR and black and white, and I save that as one file, but then I can always go back. And the other comment I was going to make, for me, like you talk about looking at an image every couple of days. Sometimes I go back to an image several years later that I really didn't process and say, oh my gosh, where was this guy? When I initially looked at it. So tell us a little bit about that kind of work that you do.
Okay, sometimes I will save the original. I'll work off a copy.
Okay.
It depends on what I plan on doing with the photo. Sometimes I'll just edit the original because I know I don't want to save the original thing. Just like, the edit version is going to be so much better. I don't care about the original anymore. Other times I'll make several copies and I'll experiment.
Right.
Okay, black, white, color. Wonder what it looked like in HDR. And try different processes. Then I'll print them all and, okay, which one looks best on paper? That's the beauty of digital. You can mess around as much as you want and not worry about it.
You know, when you go back and revisit something.
Yeah. I do that once in a while. Go back 2-3 years. That was an okay edit back then. What can I do with it now?
Right.
All the upgrades to Photoshop and Lightroom. And I'll go back and revisit it and like, ooh, this is a lot better now. I like this.
You don't use Photoshop at all. You use exclusively Lightroom.
See, Lightroom, I do use Photoshop occasionally. I'll use it for my black and white conversions. Sometimes I'll use it for removal of artifacts that I don't like in the photo, like the stray bird that flies in.
I understand. That stamp tool was really useful for, I know the first time my wife does photography also, and the first time I kind of taught her how to do the stamp tool, she had this really good image that she's exhibited, but there was just like stuff on this beach that was, you know, not part of that image, and showed her what she could do with it. And she was just so thrilled with that. So it's, that does make a nice thing. Something that digital, it's hard to do that though. It's possible in film and chemical photography, but a lot more difficult. So, So putting together a collection of your photos, would you ever consider like maybe putting that into some sort of book or even a zine, which they call it sometimes?
I've not thought about a zine, but I have thought about a book. My wife has thought about the book more than I have. back when I first started, I shot a lot of barns.
Right.
I'm gonna make a barn book. Well, there's about a dozen of them out there already. Why add more to it? But the more podcasts I listen to and the more videos I watch, the zines look pretty interesting.
And those Navy images, those Navy images are so unique and of the moment, you know, of that particular moment. I think it'd be very interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my time at Midway. I mean, I can see that, and you can put little extended captions on, you know, what was going on there and everything. That would be, really something.
Oh, yeah.
Did you also take images? Were you also taking images while you were a firefighter?
Somewhat, yeah. More for training purposes. Mm-hmm. Building construction, how buildings were built. Whenever there's a new building getting put up, I'd go and photograph it as it is being built. And that's what I think gave me my eye for detail. Look for the little things that other people will not see. As a firefighter, it's very important to know the details of the building.
Exactly.
And what to look for. And I've applied that to my photography. Looking for details. Oh, that's something that most people probably would not have seen. And I saw it. So, yeah, a zine sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Well, we planted the idea here on Art in the Air. So, do you have any let's say, goals or projects that you want to look at? Like oh, I want to go out west and shoot like a red thing or any other type of thing. You know, like what do you have like that you'd like to photograph that you haven't yet done?
Well, that you nailed it right there. My goal is to go out west. I've ventured into Kansas several times, but it's only the eastern part. I like to go the western part of Kansas. So the older towns out there, Wyoming, Montana, was it North Dakota? Go visit some of those old towns and photograph out there. I think that would be like the apex of my career right there.
Yeah. Do you ever consider about doing any people photography? Because most of your work, almost all of it, you know, it has no people in it. So it's just architecture and like things you've described. But is that something maybe you want to explore?
I tried my hand at street photography once. I came away with a good shot, but to me, it's just, I'd rather shoot things that don't move. Buildings, yeah, broken down cars don't move.
Sure, I understand that.
So it's hard. And to me, it's just not interesting.
Sure.
Sorry to all the people photographers out there, but.
No, it's what your passion is about, and that's
does
important.
Not float my boat.
Right. Right. And that's you got to do what your passion is and everything. So we'll talk about where your website and everything is later, where people can view your work, but it's important that you're on social media, but again, anything we talked about going out west, anything else maybe locally you're interested in doing, and you know, also exhibiting.
Well, I would love to have some more exhibits. I've done two solo exhibits already. I'd love to do at least a couple more in my lifetime, probably in a bigger city. I've done one in Bloomington, Illinois, and I've done some in some suburbs up by Chicago. But I'd love to do one in a big city somewhere.
Oh, right.
Chicago or Indianapolis, someplace big. That would be another highlight of my career.
Very good. Now, did you retire as a firefighter? Are you doing that anymore, or are you retired from that? Or
I've been retired since 2008, 2009. It's about 15 odd years I've been retired. I did a little career or volunteer work for a little bit, but now it's just, I have my camera, I go out and have fun.
Well, and that's good. We touched on it a little bit, but tell us a little bit about the equipment you do use.
Okay, right now I have a Canon 80D. Eventually, I like to upgrade to a full frame. I'm looking at, what was it, a Mark II, I think it was. Right now I use a 24-70 lens on my camera. Pretty much stays on there the whole time. And because of the weight of that, my camera is usually on a tripod.
Yes.
I usually keep a graduated neutral density filter on my camera, on my lens, so that way I can slow down the shutter speed some, which helps, especially with the architectural. Yeah, it just makes things so nice. Let's see. I've got a nifty 50, used it a couple times. It's been gathering dust. It's a nice lens, but I don't see a use for it.
Right.
My kit lens, it's been gathering dust. I got a nifty 50 that I've used once or twice. My wife would love me to get a macro.
Oh, okay. Yes.
And I've seen some beautiful photos with macros. Usually bugs and stuff, but I think I can use it for other things too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've never shot macro before, so it's going to be a new world for me. That's about it for my gear. Yeah.
And doesn't the 24-70 have a macro mode? I can't remember or not, because I don't know if you've tried that. But
not mine, no.
No, does your wife also like to take photographs?
Oh, no, no.
No?
She admires my work. But she tells everybody, I could be in the same spot as him and take the same photograph, and it looked like garbage. Because she doesn't have the she has an artistic bent, but not towards photography.
yeah, that can be the case. So, so we're about getting to our last moment here. So we want to know how people can find your work, like online, things like that. And maybe say again where you are going to have upcoming exhibits.
Online, I have a website, just rickdecoryphotography.com. I have a business Facebook page, Rick DeCorey Photography. Instagram, it's just Rick DeCorey Photo. And July 15th and 16th, Griffith Park, Art in the Park. July 22nd, 23rd, Sleepy Creek Art and Music Festival in Fairmount, Illinois.
And you have work that's available for sale through your website if they contact you. Well, Rick, we'd like to thank you for coming on Art in the Air. That's Rick DeCorey Photography. You can see his stuff online at rickdecoreyphotography.com and all the other places. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us on Art in the Air.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure being here.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org, and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on WDSO 88.3 FM. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, B-R-E-C-H.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.